This is Working in Teams, Unit 10, Barriers to Success, Reading Early Warning Signs to HIT Team Failure. At the end of this unit, the participant will be able to recognize key signals to team failure, use appropriate response mechanisms to address team dysfunction, and facilitate consistent scanning for symptoms of potential team failure. To have success in a healthcare environment where work and goals need to be met by various individuals working in groups, it is not finance, not strategy, not technology, but teamwork that remains the ultimate competitive advantage to get the work completed successfully. Teamwork is both powerful and rare in many instances. In this unit, you will learn the signals of dysfunctional teams, about appropriate strategies to address team dysfunction, and results that can be obtained when teams can function effectively and overcome their dysfunction. What are the answers to these questions? Are you on a functional team? Are all team members working well? Is it unproductive? Is there conflict? Think about it. According to Patrick Lencioni, noted author and management consultant, a team is, quote, a relatively small number of people that shares common goals as well as the rewards and responsibilities for achieving them. Seems logical enough. The author seems to suggest that if your group isn't a team, well, that's okay too. But regardless, be clear about who and what you are. The heavy lifting reference simply means that building a team similar to any marriage or other worthwhile relationship takes a considerable investment in time and emotional energy. A dysfunctional team, on the other hand, is one that lacks trust of other team members, lacks commitment, accountability, and shared goals. Lencioni, the author of the book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, begins a discussion concerning overcoming the five dysfunctions of a team by asking two questions that should be asked before any team-building effort. Are we really a team? And are we ready for heavy lifting? Scenario number one. There has been a request by an optometrist who is the owner of three different clinics, one optometrist in each clinic, that not only perform the eye exams, but offer a large inventory of eyeglass frames for sale. The optometrist would like to obtain a billing system that will not only bill the patient for the eye exam, but for any purchase made for glasses. The system should also indicate when the patient is due to return and whether or not they bought eyeglasses at the last visit. The team is made up of one optometrist, two clinical assistants, one receptionist, and one office manager. The team meets for the first time with the owner's direction of obtaining a new electronic billing system. They then spend the majority of the time understanding what the purpose is and what each other's roles entail. It becomes apparent that the team doesn't have the right composition to accomplish this charge from the owner. How could the team composition be modified to assure success in the task that they have been assigned? Here are Lencioni's five top dysfunctions for a team he describes in his book. As you read, note if you ever have been in teams where these behaviors were experienced or demonstrated. Let's talk about each separately since they are so important to identify to prevent team dysfunction. The team assigned to obtain a billing system has been meeting for 3 weeks. For the first 2 weeks, the optometrist was attentive and at each meeting. For the last meeting, the optometrist was unavailable. No reason was given to the team for the meeting and did not send back the decisions that were indicated from the week 2 meeting that needed her sign-off. The team is hesitant to push the optometrist to make a decision due to impacting work relationships. Which causes have been identified? Is this the beginning of team dysfunction? Dysfunction number one, absence of trust. This occurs when team members are reluctant to be vulnerable with one another and are unwilling to admit their mistakes, weaknesses, or needs for help. Without a certain comfort level among team members, a foundation of trust is impossible. The optometrist team has now been meeting for over 4 weeks. This past meeting brought to light that the person responsible for taking meeting minutes has been remiss in getting all the information that is discussed at the meeting and delivered on time to the team. The minute taker is adamant that the minutes are accurate, but the other team members are able to piece together their own meeting minutes into a cohesive account of what important discussion content led to decisions. Identifying this weakness and mistake to the meeting takers has caused extra time for the team to correct the minutes. What can be done to help the minute taker for future meetings? Dysfunction number two, fear of conflict. Teams that are lacking in trust are incapable of engaging in unfiltered, passionate debate about key issues, causing situations where team conflict can easily turn into veiled discussions and back-channel comments. In a work setting where team members do not openly air their opinions, inferior decisions are the result. The eyeglass salesman is really passionate about the system being able to indicate whether or not the patient bought their eyeglasses from the clinic at the last visit. The salesman has always felt as if his job was secondary to the clinic's business, when in fact it is revenue gained above and beyond the eye exam. The optometrist feels that the time on the team is eating into revenue when patients could be seen. The eyeglass salesman struggles to clearly state the need for the system to capture the data needed for the future sales. What can the eyeglass salesman do to assure that the system contains the necessary functions for his department? Dysfunction number three, lack of commitment. Without commitment, it is difficult for team members to commit to decisions, creating an environment where ambiguity prevails. Lack of direction and commitment can make employees, particularly star employees, disgruntled. Dysfunction number four, avoidance of accountability. When teams don't commit to a clear plan of action, even the most focused and driven individuals hesitate to call their peers on actions and behaviors that may seem counterproductive to the overall good of the team. From the very beginning of the forming of the team, there needs to be specifically agreed upon ground rules, action plans, meeting times, and deliverables from each team member. If the team veers off the agreed upon course, the team itself can course correct by using the tools from the first meeting, such as ground rules, action plans, and so forth. Dysfunction number five, inattention to results. Team members naturally tend to put their own needs, such as ego, career development, recognition, and so forth, ahead of the collective goals of the team when individuals aren't held accountable. If a team has lost sight of the need for achievement, the business ultimately suffers. When we think of trust, we normally think in terms of reliability. I trust that if I do X, then Y will occur. I trust that if I ask Ray to do something, then he'll get it done on time. I trust that if I assign a work item to Randy, he'll complete it within our company's expectation of quality. But in this scenario, we're talking about a different trust, one that maybe is a bit more, quote, touchy-feely. The confidence among team members that their peers' intentions are good and that there is no reason to be protective or careful around the group. Building a layer of trust within a team is crucial to a team achieving results. It's the foundation layer that all the other dysfunctions ride on. When you don't have that trust level between coworkers, you end up with people that feel they need to put on their Superman costume every day. They need to be invulnerable. But that leads to defensiveness and attitudes of survival more than cooperative thriving. But how do you build this? How do you create good intentions? Focus on team more than self. Remove personal defenses. This comes down to commitment from two areas, corporate commitment and personal commitment. Corporate commitment. If the decision makers, leaders, and owners of a team don't buy into this, then it doesn't matter. You can throw in the towel right now. Think about it. Even if you trusted your coworkers completely, if you didn't have the trust of your leaders, then where does that leave you? How many of us have worked for a small startup company where we always questioned the owner's motives? Do they really want to grow the company, or do they want to get bought by someone, make their money, and not care that we could lose our jobs? How many of us have worked in an organization where we felt we were working to make our bosses look good instead of pushing ahead the overall good of the company? But you see, this is the catch. Those decision makers, leaders, and owners are part of a team too, and that team needs to buy into the idea of trust just like all the other teams do. It's a corporate commitment, not an area commitment. Trust needs to be something focused on every day at every level of an organization. Otherwise, it's like having a house with only a partially strong foundation. The optometrist that owns the clinics has the commitment to improve operations by purchasing an electronic billing system that will enable to send accurate and timely bills to the patients. Personal commitment. As much as you need buy-in from the higher-ups, it ultimately comes down to what you do. Each member of the team needs to make trust their personal commitment and hold each other accountable to that commitment as well. Trust is something that needs to be talked about, that needs to be communicated, that needs to be out in the open, and issues with trust need to be dealt with. If issues aren't dealt with, then you risk creating a multi-tiered culture in your organization. Lencioni states, "I worked at a place like this. The perception was that the owners showed favor to a handful of employees. Everyone in the company saw this, but it was never really dealt with or discussed openly. Instead, those in the outer circle formed their own, quote, team. They bonded together, discussed openly, and created a high level of trust. However, insert anyone from the inner circle into the mix, and defenses were raised. Why? Because there was no guarantee that these inner circle members had good intentions, or that their focus was for the team as a whole, or that they wouldn't go running back to the ownership with a tattletale list. Of course, this also shows the importance of buying into trust at the higher levels as well. The clinic staff is committed to this vision by understanding that the system will be able to easily chart on the patient's clinic visit. The office manager is committed to finding the best billing system available. The eyeglass salesman has a commitment to understanding if the system chosen has the ability to indicate which patients had bought eyeglasses from the clinic. He can increase revenue by increasing sales to those who went elsewhere for their eyeglasses. Trust. It's hard discussing this topic on its own. When you take a step back and see all of the dysfunctions, you realize how they all interweave together. But for the purpose of this discussion, we'll sum it up this way. If you don't have trust, your team will never achieve its top potential. Your team will never achieve the type of goals they might be able to if they didn't have to spend so much time defending themselves or worrying that their ideas and thoughts may be rejected. Trust ultimately starts with each one of us. But implementing trust individually in an atmosphere of mistrust can be daunting, maybe even dangerous. Involve the team leaders, involve your coworkers, and ultimately gauge whether the team you're on is worth trying to save. Of course, if you don't think that they are, then maybe it's time to find a new team. If you're part of a team, you develop a sixth sense of knowing when dysfunction has crept in. The signs are clear. Even though you can't see vital body language or hear conversations, people start making excuses for missing the weekly conference call, or maybe they don't even bother to RSVP. When people do show up, they grunt monosyllabic responses as they pound away on their keyboards. Conversations that take place are often stilted and terse, with little real interaction. When people commit to deliverables, they sometimes renege without warning. When you try to discover what's wrong, members politely refute the notion that anything is awry. Let's talk about dysfunctional team/leadership symptoms and warnings. Consider the following symptoms of dysfunction. Dictatorial leadership. Management that does not allow disagreements out of insecurity or arrogance. No 360-degree feedback. There is limited or no team performance feedback from subordinates, peers, and/or supervisors. Personal agendas. Recruitments, selections, and promotions are based on internal political agendas. For example, hiring friends to guarantee personal loyalty at the expense of other highly performing or more qualified employees. Political compensation. Stock options, bonuses, and perks are not fairly linked to performance. Insufficient use of resources. Budgets are allocated between business units or departments based on favoritism and power centers rather than actual business needs. Empire-building practices. Managers believe that the more people they manage and the bigger the budget, the higher the chance that they will be promoted. This results in raging battles around budgets, strategies, and operations. Unequal workload distributions. You will find some departments are underutilized while other departments are overloaded. Too much management. There are many management layers in the organization, thus hindering communications and resulting in slower execution. Fragmented organization efforts. Interdepartmental competition and turf wars between rival managers lead to the emergence of silos, which results in communication gaps. Management silos almost always result in fragmented and duplicated budgets and projects, thus wasting valuable company investments. Too much talk. Plans are heavy on talk but light on action. In a political corporate culture, image management becomes more important than actions. Ineffective meetings. Argumentative and heated cross-divisions meetings with discussion and language focusing on point scoring and buck passing rather than sharing responsibility and collaborating to solve the problem. Lack of collaboration. Every person for himself or herself. Low sense of unity or camaraderie on the team. The key criterion for decision-making is, what's in it for me? Low productivity. Management wastes more time and energy on internal attack and defense strategies instead of executing the work, innovating, and overcoming challenges. Critical projects fall behind on deadlines, budgets, and performance targets, such as sales, market share, quality, and other operational targets. Constant crisis mode. Management teams spend most of their time on firefighting instead of proactive planning for next-generation products and services. Morale deterioration. Reduced level of commitment and enthusiasm by other teams. Even successful results cannot be shared and celebrated due to animosity and internal negative competition. Backstabbing. Backbiting among the executives and managers becomes common in public. Highly stressful workplace. There is a high rate of absenteeism and a high employee turnover rate. The optometrist's team has had many bumps to get over, but they are finally on the right track with their charge of finding the best electronic billing system for their clinics. They have decided to join forces and put all individual motives aside for choosing the system. The optometrist is now fully engaged and willing to admit that she doesn't really understand the functions of billing, what it all entails, just that it is a vital piece of the business. The office manager is ecstatic that her knowledge is being used. Discussions can take place without feeling attacked. The minute taker is now using digital recording to capture the discussions and decision points, and the minutes are sent to the team within 24 hours of the meeting. Has the dysfunctional team become functional? Strategies to manage dysfunctional teams. State your observations with specific examples and express your concerns. Start by sending an email with a strongly worded header to implore people to attend the next team meeting. In your header, and in the first few lines of your message, state your observations about the team's behavior. For example, I have noticed that many people have dropped off of our calls. People who attend are not really present. Some of you are reneging on promises, and others are declining to pitch in to help others as you used to. As a result, I feel like the team is falling apart. I am asking that all of you fully participate in our next meeting so that we can explore the real issues and decide what we can do to get ourselves back on track. Follow up with a phone call to make sure people have read your message and plan to attend. Listen intently. Once on the call, describe in more detail the kind of behavior you're noticing that's causing the team to deflate. Leave room for silence and reflection. If no one responds after a while, ask for validation. Are they seeing things the same way? Is there something you are not seeing? You may start by acknowledging some of your own issues. For example, you haven't had enough time to provide thoughtful feedback to everyone lately. Or you have a new manager who is pulling you in multiple directions. By sharing your own perspective, you can encourage others to discuss their own barriers to participation. Create a safe discussion space. Consider opening up a text-based chat session where participants can make entries anonymously to precede, augment, or follow up on a real-time phone discussion. Craft some carefully worded questions to elicit honest responses without inhibition. Include a variety of questions such as, on a scale of 1 to 10, how energized do you feel to be part of this team today? One of the toughest challenges I face in fully participating on this team is blank. One of the greatest rewards on being on this team is blank. Providing an avenue for anonymous written comments may help create a level playing field among different cultural and personality types. Crystallize the underlying problems. Your team has identified the symptoms that are preventing real collaboration. Now it's time to name the real problems that are causing the behavior. You can try doing this on a team call, especially if your team had demonstrated a high degree of trust for each other and for you in the past. You might also try using a web conference tool to enable anonymous input. Alternately, you can ask someone who is not part of your team to interview team members in confidence. After all, if you are perceived to be the problem, members will be reticent to say much on a team call regardless of the vehicle. As a team, set priorities for problem solving, starting with problems that have the greatest impact on the team's performance. Collaborate on the best solutions. Once the team has developed a deeper understanding about the dysfunctional behaviors and the underlying problems, it's time to brainstorm solutions. Generate ideas for at least a few quick hits right away, such as arranging a meeting time more convenient to all, or setting up a team portal for easier document sharing. Tackle the tougher issues next, such as reducing the amount of rework required when the organization shifts direction again, or identifying resources outside of the team who can be tapped to help in certain circumstances. Document the related actions and responsible people and keep the team updated as to your collective progress. Try using a web conference tool to elicit an impressive array of ideas in a short time. Seek commitments to be part of the change. Elicit from each team member specific actions she will take to lead to more successful collaboration. These commitments should be made to the entire team. For example, a team member who habitually skips the weekly team meeting might make a commitment to be present at least 75% of the time. Or the person who multitasks her way through every call might promise to clear her desk and calendar and be fully present at future meetings. The person who says yes to everything but fails to deliver almost every time might promise to be honest about what he can take on and will alert everyone ASAP if he is being unrealistic about what he could deliver. Take the team's temperature often. If a team has been allowed to drift apart for any length of time, it may take many attempts to get them back on course. Find a variety of ways to check in, both as a team and with individuals. Try a simple periodic phone call to each member to check in, or ask for feedback on a call. You might also try using some sort of online tool that allows all members to provide a few quick responses, the results of which can be later shared with the team. Of course, observing the team's performance against agreed-upon measures may be the best indicator as to whether the team is collaborating successfully. Reach out to disaffected individuals personally. Some people will be harder to turn around than others. In some cases, you may have to let go of those whose behaviors are toxic to effective remote collaboration. Take the time and energy to reach out personally with greater frequency for those whose active participation is vital. Make calls, send emails, or meet them face-to-face if possible. Express your concern, lend your support, and provide honest feedback. You want to be honest about your frustration, your disappointment, emphasizing the impact to the work of the team. At the same time, you need to praise their knowledge and skills, so critical to the team to achieve its goals. Consciously model best practices behavior. Treat team meetings as the most important event on your calendar. Let people know what's expected of them in advance. Come prepared with an agenda and stick to it. Check in to see how people are doing. Project enthusiasm and energy. Applaud team and individual achievements, both large and small. Make team meetings engaging and productive. Use technology wisely when it can accelerate results. Elicit needed input, or otherwise increase the effectiveness and efficiency of each meeting. Respond promptly to emails with insightful information. Admit when you feel you're falling short of expectations and explain why. The best way to overcome dysfunctional behavior of remote teams is to nip it in the bud. To do this, you need to develop antennae sensitive enough to alert you to the first sign of trouble. So, if people have stopped exchanging ideas in meetings, or if team members are ignoring emails from others, check in with the team as soon as possible. Be direct about what you're observing. Articulate the impact of the team and its shared goals, and declare what you need to have the team do as a result. A, quote, road to Abilene is when a group collectively decides to do something which no individual in the group really wants to do. The term comes from the Abilene paradox, demonstrated by the story of a family who decides to travel 53 miles north to Abilene for ice cream. On the way back, they begin arguing after realizing that none of them wanted to go in the first place. Consider these lessons learned from the road to Abilene. Avoid false consensus. Overcome the fear of speaking out. Encourage effective decision-making within a group. Striving to create a functional, cohesive team is one of the few remaining competitive advantages available to any organization looking for a powerful point of differentiation. Functional teams avoid wasting time talking about the wrong issues and revisiting the same topics over and over again because of lack of buy-in. Functional teams also make their quality decisions and accomplish more in less time and with less distraction and frustration. On successful teams, players rarely leave organizations where they are part of a cohesive team. Teams succeed because they are extremely human.